brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 34 for June 21st, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinicho. Dismariv agus kid fotorovista. Hello and welcome to technology.ie. I'm Conor Muinicho in the studio, and on Skype it's Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Conor. How's it going?
Good. Where are you this week?
Very boring. In Carlo. Sorry to disappoint.
That's just fine. You're going travelling, of course, to the ICANN meeting in Prague, I think, at the end of this week. You'll tell us more about that a little bit later on as well. And you've got a friend with us again this week. Introduce our guest, please, Michaela.
Well, Anthony Van Covering, I'm not sure exactly how to describe Anthony. He's an interesting character, I suppose, is one way of putting it. But he's newsworthy at the moment because his company has applied for not one, not two, not three, not even 10 new top-level domains, but a grand total of 70.
Welcome to the podcast, technology.ie, Anthony.
Thank you very much, Con.
Where are you based?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Cool. And thanks.
So he's not in Los Angeles this evening.
Oh, right. Where are you?
But that's where I'm based.
Okay. And where are you this evening?
I'm in Vienna.
Oh, very good. And our side of the pond.
Indeed.
And you were mentioning just before we started as well, you're going to the next ICANN meeting in Prague as well.
Yeah, in our business, if you're not going, you're probably not doing very much. So, you know, there's a lot of people are going to be meeting each other there and sort of staring at each other over a drink, having now revealed what they've applied for.
It's like poker, isn't it?
Yes, a bit. It is. There's a lot of game theory in it, I think.
We're going to talk more about that. And actually, yeah, the game theory references are interesting as well. We're going to talk more about that in part two of the show. We're also going to talk about Microsoft Surface, announced this week, the Dublin Conference on Internet Freedom. And Apple are changing the way that podcasts such as this one appear in iTunes. In fact, they will appear in iTunes on the desktop, but not on mobile devices anymore. We might refer to that as well in the show. Don't forget, technology.ie is the website. If you want to find out about this podcast, we'll have links and notes on everything we talk about. You can leave comments, all kinds of social media stuff going on there. You can tweet us and refer to us in various forums and Facebook and things like that as well. There's also a contact page. There is a contact page, Michaela, isn't there? There ought to be.
There is. That's how we're getting all these wonderfully informative press releases from people.
That's right. It's interesting. In fact, one from Ovum that came this week, and it's I've just put it into the notes there. There isn't actually anything to link to on this, but this is one of these analysis companies and research companies, and they had some comments in relation to the Microsoft Surface launch. An analyst with them called Jan Dawson is not impressed. He says, no surprises in the software. Surface tablet uses the same two desktop and RT versions of Windows 8 we've been hearing about. As such, nothing has changed there, and it still looks like a huge break with the past on the Surface, but with a jarring switch back to the old desktop world hidden beneath. That's just a taster. He's very down on the whole thing. And he also points out that it's a huge vote of no confidence by Microsoft in its OEM partners, who should rightly feel slighted. It's rarely a good idea for an OS owner to start competing with its OEM partners, and this does not feel like an exception. Do you think he's right, Michaela?
Well, Microsoft has this interesting, I suppose is the best way of describing it, relationship with their partners. I mean, we're a partner with Microsoft. We have the, I can't remember which level it is, hosting certification and partnership thing with them. And we get the SPLA licensing from them, which means we get service provider licensing, so we pay for the Windows licensing based on usage. And when Microsoft have, you know, launched various things like Office 365, which is competing directly against what we offer. So, of course, you know, we weren't too happy about that, so we raised it with them. And you know, some of the conversations we had with them were very, very circular. They just didn't seem to understand why we had a problem with this.
This is,
like, oh no, but we're not competing against you. And it's like, well, you are. I mean, how can you say you're not?
What is Office 365? Is what an online office version of Office? Is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's Microsoft's answer to Google Apps. Is probably the simplest way of putting it.
And what are you offering that competes with that?
Well, we offer business email and SharePoint.
Okay.
So I mean, the business, the key difference, of course, between ourselves, them, Google, I mean, it's all down to, you know, certain functionality. We can say, you know, all the data is stored in our servers in Dublin, this kind of thing. So in terms of data privacy, data protection, all that kind of thing, people know exactly where the data is if they're hosting with ourselves. Whereas with other of these big cloud-based solutions, that's not necessarily the case.
I guess you're always going to have this, though, in a way, Michele, with an organizations as large as Microsoft or even Google, for example, with their fingers in so many pies. Sometimes they're competing against their partners. Sometimes they're even competing against themselves.
Of course. I mean, you look at the detergent market, where you've got one or two companies own practically everything, and they're competing against their own brands.
But you know what? We've come at this from a business analyst point of view. Let's get down to the basics and brass tacks here. This device, this gadget, this Surface, this tablet, this ultra portable, it's almost been described as well when you take the keyboard into account. You know, I was a little bit excited, you know, made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up a little bit. What did you think, Michele?
Well, I was following the actual screencast of it as it happened the other night, because as you probably know, I don't go to bed that early. And I can't remember who I was Skyping or IMing with at the time. They're like, oh, you have to look at this, you have to see this. And it was pretty cool. I mean, you know, they're doing the entire kind of reveal a bit like the way Steve Jobs and Apple do them as well. I mean, obviously Steve Jobs is dead, so he's not doing them anymore. And then they released this video, which I think I posted onto the technology.ie page on Facebook.
You did. I watched it. It's kind of exciting. It's
very slick.
It is very slick. It's very un-Microsoft. And it's interesting because you talked about the references to Apple are unavoidable here, not least in terms of the approach from the point of view of the architecture and the fact that Apple's advantage has always been, in a way, that they control both the hardware and the software. In this case, with Microsoft offering something like that, it gives them that same kind of advantage. But also, they did a little bit of this kind of marketing. And there was this teaser, this invitation that went out to the tech press last week was very much sort of, you know, we're going to launch something big on Monday, but we're not going to tell you what it is. And it was almost an element of Apple's type of showmanship at work there as well.
Well, I think this is, you know, this is a good thing that, you know, Microsoft are fighting back. I mean, they're, you know, they had dominance. They still obviously do. But I mean, I think, you know, like any company, when you get to a certain size, it's probably relatively easy to sit back a little bit and just, you know, enjoy your dominance.
Now, I know you're an Apple fanboy, Michele, but as a consumer, this has got to be good for consumers, hasn't it?
Well, it depends on the price point. Mm. I mean, it doesn't matter how shiny and beautiful and gorgeous and sexy and fantastic the Surface is. If the price point isn't right, then no, it'll only go to certain people who have the money and who believe in the Microsoft way of doing things. I mean, personally, as you know, I mean, for me, everything's on a Mac. But I even go off and buy kind of crazy things like solar-powered Logitech keyboards for my Mac.
What about you, Anthony? Are you a Mac or PC?
I use a Mac these days.
Like so many people say that they used to be PC, but they use a Mac these days, as you put it. Is this Surface tablet something which might entice you back to the Windows world?
No, I'm not that interested in tablets in general. I haven't found them to be useful. The reason I use a Mac is not because I love the operating system so much as I actually really like the hardware. And I've been, you know, I've thought about occasionally even installing a Windows system on my MacBook Air. Mm. I don't like the file system in Apple, for instance. I find it appalling. But, you know, it's usable, it's light, it works, and, you know, I just like the hardware a lot better. Mm.
I've as a Windows, as a long-standing diehard Windows aficionado, I've actually found that the file system in Windows has taken on some of the worst elements of Apple in recent years as well. I'm finding it more and more difficult to find my way around it. But that's beside the point. We won't go down that particular road. But that's you make a good point there about the hardware, Anthony. And really looking at a video here. Which is all we've got, and a demonstration of this technology. No journalist, for example, was allowed to put their hands on the Surface tablet or use the keyboard that came with it. We don't know all that much. We don't know the price, as you point out, and we don't know as Michele points out, and we don't really know if this is as good as it looks.
No, we don't.
No,
I mean I think I was reading the Steve Jobs biography a few months back. There was some mention about one of their product launches where the product just wasn't ready. Mm. So all they could do was show things around it, but not let anybody look at it too closely. As if they had, it was practically an empty shell or something. So I don't know. I mean, is there any of that press coverage saying when this thing will be ready for shipping?
Apparently with the launch of Windows 8, which I think is scheduled for October. And right. So the cheap version, the ARM processor, the Windows RT version, I think, is going to be ready then, and they're saying 90 days later for the Pro version. Looking at the specs on these, it looks like there's going to be considerable difference in price probably between those in terms of the hardware spec and the software spec that's offered. But it's I've got to say, it's something that, and I'm someone who hasn't put his hands on an iPad yet. Well, I have put my hands on it, but I haven't become an iPad owner yet at this stage. I'm a fan of iPhones and of Android phones as well, but I'm certainly, one of the things I'm interested in is portability and the ability to be, for example, I did away with a desktop a few years ago, and I use a fairly high spec Dell laptop now for most of my work. It's my desktop and mobile system, but I'd be interested to see what kind of software, and I run things like audio and video editing software. I'd be interested to see if this Pro version of this tablet could support that, and the kind of portability that might give you could be something very exciting indeed. Did this generate where you are and in the community you move in, Anthony? Did this generate excitement among anyone or among other people that you know? As I say, you're saying yourself, you're not a tablet person yourself. What's the general impression from people you've been talking to about Surface?
I have, to be honest, I have heard nothing of it from the people that I work with. But I will tell you that I have seen a number of people rush out and buy an iPad and then a few months later not use it very much anymore. They're sort of sitting around the office. And I think that for a lot of business purposes, going to a meeting and taking notes notwithstanding, the lack of a keyboard and the lack of the ability to do the kinds of things that you're talking about makes it pretty hard to use.
I got to say, yeah, I mean, it's great for watching Netflix in bed or something like that. But if you need to do work, if you need to type, if you need to do something like that, an iPad isn't really going to cut it.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend $800 just so I can watch a movie on a plane. Mm.
Let's move on. Next thing we want to talk about this week. Apparently there was a big, exciting conference on in Dublin this week, Michele. Dublin Conference on Internet Freedom, and all kinds of people talking about it, all kinds of people involved, and indeed the government involved, the Department of Foreign Affairs, very much involved up to the hilt in it.
Yeah, I mean, this is good. I mean, this is a positive thing that we're seeing these kind of events happening in Dublin. And, when I got news of it, I was absolutely delighted to see this going on. But the problem, as we discussed before we started recording, was, I only found out about it totally by accident. Mm. It wasn't something that was particularly heavily publicised. And it was, I saw several people tweeting from the event on Monday and Tuesday, particularly Carl and Lillington. I think there were a couple of other people as well. And, there were some interesting people who were at it, by the sounds of things, and it sounds like that things got quite passionate. There was one bit here, was it? Where was it? Something about some people standing up. Oh, here it is. The session moderator had to cope with trying to curtail several long outbursts from the floor by Azerbaijani government figures. Organizers had to resort to shutting off one speaker's microphone. Does that sound familiar to you, Anthony?
Yeah, sometimes you have to do it. It's very interesting that conferences on internet freedom, and they come in many guises, often end up censoring people or promoting people who are not at all friends of freedom. So they tend to be quite ironic in many ways.
But it's interesting, these outbursts from the floor were from, as you point out, Michaela, Azerbaijani government figures, and it was these outbursts were in response to an Azerbaijani blogger and civil rights activist who had been imprisoned by his government until human rights campaigns helped to free him. He was speaking at the conference, and this was in response to him pointedly thanking his government for not having him killed. So
yeah.
You know, it's black humor, but it is it also points, I suppose, to the fact that the internet really is an amazing opportunity for, I suppose, for free speech and human rights, and it is something that it's interesting to see this kind of conference going on in Ireland, being held in Dublin, to see the government involved in it. Cory Doctorow, I saw, that was speaking at it as well, who's a person who's been very much involved with the Electronic Frontier Foundation and other things related to, I suppose, internet freedom. That's all very well for the Department of Foreign Affairs and the Irish government to be hosting meetings such as this in Dublin and conference such as this, but you've made the point before that you go to international conferences at which you'd expect to see the government represented at official level, and there is no participation.
Yeah, there's absolutely no participation whatsoever. ICANN this week, well, next week rather, the governments will be talking, they will meet, they will interact with the rest of the ICANN community. Irish government, they won't be there. They will not show up. The IGF, which is another international event, they won't be there. RIPE has a section where governments can go. They won't be there. It's depressing. It really is.
It is, as you say, when policy is being decided, discussed and decided internationally, and we're not represented at that. But it's a drum we've beaten before, and something we'll come back to again in the future, no doubt. Finally, and I've posted one link to this. It's covered in various places. There's an article in PC Magazine, which I'll link to, and we'll put into the notes as well. Apple, it's rumoured, it was discovered in the iOS 6. It's discovered that podcasts is not appearing in iTunes, in the mobile version of iTunes there, and it looks like they're going to set up a separate app for that. That's of interest, I suppose, traditionally of interest to a limited group of people, but since we're actually doing a podcast here, it is of interest to us, and I suppose, would you say it's fair to say, Michaela, that podcasting hasn't exactly gripped the imagination in the way that people hoped and thought it might maybe 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, I don't listen to podcasts that much. I mean, I only listen to one or two, and not regularly. I mean, I know some people do, but I listen to radio quite happily. But I won't listen to podcasts of radio shows.
You see, that's the thing there I find difficult to understand, Michele. You say you listen to radio, so
yes.
That means you turn it on and whatever happens to be on the radio right now, you'll happily listen to, rather than choose to subscribe to and download a program of your choice and listen to that instead.
Well, there's a reason for that. It's
yeah.
Because I do most of my radio listening in the car.
Yes.
And my car doesn't have an internet connection.
Okay, gotcha. Fair enough. As do I, you do most of my radio listening in the car or on the road, or indeed on the... say out maybe working in the garden or something like that. But what I'm listening to is stuff that I've subscribed to and downloaded overnight while I slept onto my my Android phone, and I just get up in the morning and I see I've got a queue of shows I want to listen to over the course of that day, and I go through them as I choose. So I mean, are you talking music radio, or are you listening to talk radio? What Is there anything in particular? I'm just curious as to what it is that what works for some people and doesn't work for other people.
Well, for me personally, I listen to RTE. Mm. RTE Radio 1. I end up listening to, I don't know, like 5-7 Live or whatever the hell they're calling it these days. And some bits of that morning program, which of course I can't remember the name of.
John Murray.
No, the one before that.
Oh, Morning Ireland, yeah.
Morning Ireland.
Mm. Yeah.
And that thing in the evening after the sports thing.
Mm. The arts show, is it?
I can't remember the name of that either.
It's an arts show, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of arty farty and stuff. It's good though. It's very good. It's very enjoyable.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it is something I always find interesting because I'm interested in certain talk shows, but I'm not interested in others. And I guess in relation to your point there, Michele, when it comes to say something like 5-7 Live on RTE or Morning Ireland, something that has to do with that day's topical news, that's no good to you tomorrow if it was downloaded overnight. That I agree with you, and you want to hear that live and as it happens. But some other shows, like for example the arts show you mentioned, I would definitely happily listen to that maybe a day, half a day, 2 days later or whatever it might be. What about you, Anthony? Are you a radio listener? Are you a podcast listener? Are there certain programs that you choose to subscribe to and download rather than make a date with a programming schedule and hear them as they're being broadcast live?
Yeah, I listen to both radio and podcasts, and my behavior is exact opposite of Michele's, and I will listen to podcasts in the car.
Mm.
And the type of shows I listen to are those which don't really age very much. So one show I listen to is In Our Time on the BBC, which I like.
Me too.
And I also listen to various shows about dissecting the news media. And those wear out after a week, but certainly not the same day. And then I will listen to the radio at home, say before bed or in the morning, the news.
Yeah, and there are, as we point out, certain shows that you got to hear live, or you know, it makes more sense if you're listening to the news or something like that. That is certainly true. And you say podcasting is more suited to the shows, as you say, that don't necessarily age so much from that point of view. But what do you feel about it though, Anthony? Do you feel that it hasn't kind of captured the public mood as it could have? And one of the things that people point out in relation to this iTunes change, or this Apple change, and perhaps moving podcasts out of iTunes and into an app of its own, is that it can be difficult to discover podcasts, new shows, things like that. They're kind of buried and lost there in iTunes.
Well, I don't think anyone discovers things by going, I mean, probably some people do, going through all the apps in iTunes. Somebody tells them about it, you know.
Yeah.
The trouble that podcasts have is that they tend to be discursive and they take a long time. Which is great for in-depth information, but that's not what people are looking for most of the time. They're looking for the 3-second summary.
Yeah.
And so they have a hard time in a media world that is very, very fast-paced.
But again, as you say, in relation to the type of shows that you choose, how do you subscribe to those? How do you choose to manage those, download those? Do you go to a web page? Do you use an app? What do you do?
I use iTunes, actually. I download them in iTunes.
Okay. So do you download them on your iPhone, or do you, for example, do you sync the iPhone with a desktop iTunes? Is that how you do it, or?
I do, which I don't like doing, but that's, you know, I find that process annoying, but I do that, yeah. Probably once a month.
Mm.
Not more than that.
Yeah, and that's the thing I find is that I think it's difficult to do that. If you don't sync up your iTunes, it's difficult to get new versions of the podcasts straight onto your iPhone. There are some apps, I think, that do that well. And since I moved to Android, I've found it's difficult to find a good app. At the moment, I'm using Google Listen, which offers me, I suppose, the web convenience of being able to subscribe to podcasts in Google Reader, and the ones you put into this listen folder then get synced up with your listen app, but it's still far from perfect. Let's move on. We're going to talk in detail, Anthony, about your business and your announcement that your company, Top Level Domain Holdings, has been revealed in last week's reveal by ICANN as the applicant for 70 new top-level domains, or prospective new top-level domains. But first, Michele, as we usually do, we pause around the middle of the show each week to ask what's going on in the world of Black Knight.
Well, in terms of special promotions, we're still doing a 30-day free trial on GoMobi, which is, you know, the mobile site builder. We're doing a discount on one-year registrations of .co domains. And on the technology.ie blog, we will be giving away some coupons from Groupon.
Excellent. Have you that announced? Has that been announced yet? Or
no, that'll go up probably tomorrow. I was kind of distracted by other things, like you know, the usual. I'm about to leave the country for a week, and 20 people want to have meetings with me, and another 25 want email replies. So that kind of got pushed to one side.
Okay, but we'll look forward to that. You can find out more about the special offers on the blog at blog.blackknight.com, and watch out for that Groupon giveaway on our site at technology.ie.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're listening to technology.ie, the podcast brought to you by Black Knight, co-presented by Black Knight CEO Michele Nealon and myself, Conam Weenicon. And our guest this week is Anthony Vancouvering. Anthony, you're very welcome to the show from your company, Top Level Domain Holdings, TLDH. And it does exactly what it says on the tin, I guess, in relation to what your company does. And of course, you've applied for not one, not two, but tell us again, how many new generic top level domains?
Well, 92 with our clients, but 72 on our own.
Wow. Tell me how you got into this, Anthony. What's your own background?
Well, I have a degree in comparative literature and classics. So naturally, I had to find something else to do. I've been interested in this space since the mid-90s when I decided to call up these guys in Marina Del Rey, and I got John Postel on the phone, who was at the time sort of managing all the addressing and protocol stuff for the internet. And that was before it had sort of any legal status at all. It was a cooperation among people, and that's, you know, a spirit that was very attractive to me, and one that I try to, to see supported as we moved into this sort of hyper-legal ICANN realm. So I started a couple of companies that were devoted to brand protection. Net Names, I was the U.S. wing of that company. Now it's owned by NetBenefit in the U.K., Group NBT as they call themselves now, and later Name Engine. And the reason I did those was basically I had no money at all, and those are service companies. And you didn't really need to have any kind of large capital investment, and indeed they were started without anyone else's money at all, and very little of my own. So those were sold, and I was always interested in generic top-level domains because they were the safety valve for people who were not able to register in their own country. And despite the fact that that's quite a bit more liberal these days, there's still a lot of places where if you are not a sanctioned business of some kind, you can't register the local national domain. So the idea of having generic top-level domains that were open to different groups who were not defined by nationality the way that telephone systems are, it's always been very appealing to me. And so when I heard that ICANN was finally going to liberalize this space and do it in a way that wasn't just a beauty contest, I was very attracted to it, and I began to look around, and I had the good luck of meeting some people who were interested in the space and had money to invest. And so we started a company called Minds and Machines. That's the operational wing of our company, and Top Level Domain Holdings is the parent. And we have other operations in Germany and the UK, other subsidiaries. So we've applied for a lot of names, and you know, as we have a system that's ours. It's a fork of a system called COCA, which was developed in the for smaller countries who didn't have resources, so it had a sort of a shared registry system. And so we forked that into a GTLD variant, and we realized that the incremental costs of running a top-level domain when you're already running some others is quite small, so we decided to reach out and try and get some clients. And we were happy to get some pretty good ones, including you know, a very large religious organization in the United States, the American Bible Society, who were doing .bible. And through friends, the Republican State Leadership Committee, which is part of the Republican Party in the United States. So we have a number of clients doing widely differing things. And I would say probably the thing that distinguishes us most from some of the other applicants is that we made a concerted effort early on to work with geographical top-level domains, and in particular cities. These are great because there's really no contention. Once the city picks you or the region picks you, there's not any doubt about who's going to be doing it. So we're working with the city of London, the city of Miami, Bavaria in Germany, which is a rich area for domain names. I think it has the of all Germany, where they register domains like crazy, it is the most saturated. The people like it there. So that's .Bayern. And then we're also doing .NRW, which is Nordrhein-Westfalen, which is has in the west of Germany, which has Dortmund and a couple of Düsseldorf, I'm sorry, and other big cities. So that, we think, we'll see how this contention works out, because you're about to say, yes, you've applied for 72, but many of them are other people are applying for as well. So we're very happy to have these geographical ones, because they're outside of that that battle.
This is it's. I want to talk about some more about what you're doing in a moment. But just when you referred to contention in relation to some of those domains, I want to take my hat off to you, Michaela, and to the people in Black Knight for what you've done with what is it? .what.co, is that what you've called the website? Because it's a fantastic way to actually break down this 1930 revealed. New top level domains that have been applied for, and see how they break down geographically, how they break down in terms of for example, the contested ones versus the non contested ones, and it's pretty much browsable, clickable, sort and sift the data any way you want, Michele.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, you know, we saw the list. I mean, Anthony saw the list. Everybody saw the list. Mm. And we, you know, you have this massive CSV, you know, so it's like, you know, you can open it up in Excel and you're just looking at this great big munge of text, and you're searching through it for things. So like, you throw in company names, you throw in keywords that you think you might find in it. But I mean, I don't know, I can't cope with a file that big. I mean, it's got nearly 2,000 lines with loads and loads of data. And just trying to make sense of all that.
So you've done word clouds and graphics and infographics and things like that. Very, very useful, very interesting. But also, as I say, everything is clickable. Everything is hyperlinked. So you can literally click on, see the regions, for example. You click on Europe, 687 applications. You can see what they all are. You can see where they're coming from. So you see, for example, dot phishing has been applied for. You click on that. You go in, you discover, yes, it's Anthony's company, Top Top Level Domain Holdings Limited. And if you click on their name, you can go through and see everything that's there, and you have listed whether or not the extension refers to a brand, whether you can download the public application, the PDF. Oh, that's available in all cases, I see.
It's not a PDF, it's a HTML file.
Okay. Whether it's a geographic application or a community application, and whether a number of applications exist, that's whether it's contested or not. Is that that's what that means, isn't it? Was that you were saying that that's a kind of a strategic?
Yeah, I think so.
Sorry, go ahead, Michele.
No, it's just you know, there's the community and the geo stuff. It's self-declaratory. I think Anthony probably knows more about this than I do. But even if like there's one or two in there on the list, not in Anthony's applications, but in other ones, where I think .bar was one example where one of the applications has said that they're a geo, but that's their decision to say they're a geo. I don't know if that actually fit the criteria.
Yeah, the geos are actually, what's a geographic domain? It has to be on one of the lists that ICANN publishes. But I would say that when someone self-declares, there may be other reasons. So, for instance, we applied for .zulu, with the blessing of the king of the Zulus. And it's not on the list, but they think they're a geographic area. And they would be unhappy if we said, oh, well, it's, you know, it's not on the list, you don't really count. So we declared it as a geographic. What does that mean, really? It means that if it's a geographic domain, you have to have permission from the relevant government. And we do. So we don't really see a downside in doing that. And it pleases our client, and it, you know, sort of reinforces their own view of who they are, and we're happy to do that.
And do you mind me asking, Anthony, is your client the king of the Zulus in this case, or is it something that you have applied for in partnership with them on your own behalf?
Well, when it comes to geographics, it's rather a distinction without a difference. You must have a cooperation with the government. In the case of .London, they're the applicant, we're the service provider. In the case of the others, we're the applicant, and we're doing so in partnership with the government. But in all of these cases, there's a revenue share to the government. In the case of the Zulus, it's to the king's charity. And, you know, it depends where it is, where that money goes. And, you know, our view on it is that, you know, we're the steward of this top-level domain for the people who live there, and it's up to them to decide what they want to do with that. So,
do you see yourselves, Anthony, as, you know, they always say in a gold rush, the people who make the money are the people who sell the picks and shovels. In your case, you're selling selling registry expertise to registries. As well, as you say, you're operating on behalf of some people, such as .bible and that as well. Would you see yourselves as being the pick and shovel merchants?
Well, I would say that saying, although oft repeated, is completely idiotic. The people who make money in a gold rush are the people who discover the gold. We offered a lot of consulting around this just because there's such a lack of knowledge, and we would have been happy just to sell our registry services, but everyone who came to us didn't know the first thing about ICANN. So, and they had absolutely no ability, for the most part, to fill in this horrific application that ICANN made us all fill in. So, you know, there was a clear need by them to have someone hold their hand, and, you know, we're able to do that, and so that's what we did. And going forward, we'll continue to advise them about what's going on at ICANN if they can't keep track of it themselves. For instance, with these cities, they really need to be aware of the larger geopolitical currents that are going on in the internet world. And, you know, it's just not something that has often held their attention. Typically, we're dealing with someone who's the equivalent of a tourism and branding agency in the city, because that's where, this is our name. It obviously goes to this department. And they don't know anything about telephony or the ITU or the IGF or any of this sort of NGO acronym soup that Michele and I are dealing with all the time.
We've invited readers of technology.ie. We've tweeted this as well. We've flagged the fact that you were going to join us on the show this week, Anthony, and invited people to submit questions that they'd like us to put to you, which they've done in comments on the blog at technology.ie. Michele, as I mentioned, I think before we started, you're more of the expert, I think, when it comes to the terminology and some of the issues. Some of the questions refer to things that I don't even understand or know about, but I look forward to learning. And I'd say if you could perhaps go through some of those questions, the ones that are relevant, filter them as you see fit, and I suppose present them to Anthony in as coherent a way as possible.
Well, I'll try my best.
Good man.
Anthony, a couple of questions that we got. I'll start with one from Fred from Mail Club. And, you know, from a registrar perspective, he's approaching this because he knows, okay, you've got a back end that you're going to use for all of these applications. There might be some variations in the technical details, but from a practical perspective, do you guys plan to allow a single technical test, or have you even thought about that yet?
Do you know what he means by that?
Well, okay, let's say, for example, if you get accredited with Newstar for .biz or for .tel, and then you go and get accredited for .co, like we did recently, we didn't have to go through OTE testing for .co.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless there are some significant variations, which I think could also be tested separately, we don't see any need to put registrars through, you know, a complicated bureaucracy. We're already seeing how idiotic that is with ICANN, making us fill out 92 different applications for exactly the same back end. So that is not something I'd wish to visit on any other of our partners.
Well, that's good to hear. The other one, which is something that I'll be personally raising with a lot of the applicants and the service providers over the coming weeks and months. As registrars, one of the problems we face is that for every registry or back-end provider, we have to fund accounts. Now, in some cases, affiliates do it with their CCTLDs. You can put money into a single account, and then it's up to affiliates to distribute that to the CCTLD operators as you use it. So the problem that we're all worried about now is that if we're going to carry, say, 200 or 300 extensions, having to put funds on 200 or 300 separate accounts will cause lots of headaches. So, I mean, have you guys thought about that?
We haven't thought about it, but now that you raise it, it's a very apropos concern, and I think we would want to address that. Again, you know, I don't think it makes any sense to make it hard for your partners when you want to sell a product. So as long as we can be assured that contractually this makes sense, in other words, if it's for one of our clients, we're running the back end, but they are the registry, I'd say that's up to them. But as far as the ones we own, absolutely, we would, you know, want to make that easy for people.
That's a good answer. Thank you. It's one of these things. I think there's going to be a major challenge. I mean, there's a lot of the entire kind of ramp up for registrars and registries that needs to be really thrashed out.
I don't know what it's going to look like, Michele, but I have to believe that the whole registry ecosystem as it exists is about to undergo some strains and very possibly, you know, change quite a bit. I know that some of our clients who are selling to their trade group or you know, just a limited set of people are not particularly interested in the registrar channel. They don't really add any value for them because they already know the people. They know how to reach them. It's not like they're going to get more customers. It's just a bunch of paperwork for them. So I look at this and I say, okay, well, you know, one of the values of a registrar is that they can explain to you what's going on, perhaps if they bother to pick up the phone, or if in case of a big one, you can sort of manage all of your names in one place. I think that, you know, both sides of this equation are going to have to step up their game, and I think that it is going to be there's going to be competitive elements as well as cooperative ones. And I'd be very interested to see how that works.
Well, I would agree. I mean, there's going to be some changes, though I've seen some suggestions from some circles that just leave me scratching my head and shaking my head and just thinking, you know, what on earth are they thinking? What was the other question? Did he have another? No, I think that's pretty much all of Fred's queries. Now, let's see. I suppose what James is asking here, it was actually quite a long question. You know, the thing is this, I suppose, in terms of marketing, promoting a lot of these new extensions, I mean, how do you get that balance right? How do you get it so that you can promote them to as many people as possible without using fear-mongering tactics? And how can you do that in a manner that's effective?
Well, I think what you see in general...
Or can you?
Yeah, I think you can. And the way you do it is you stop looking at all domains as the same and all domains as being suitable for everyone. So, for instance, one of the names that we got that was uncontested is .rodeo. You know, we applied for that because we happen to know a little bit about that world. And, you know, we have good sources for reaching people. So, you know, we're not very concerned about, you know, how do I reach everyone in the world? Because not everyone does rodeo. There are other names that, you know, you think of the dot webs or things like that, where it's very, very general purpose. In fact, it is, you know, it really doesn't segregate the audience at all. And in those cases, I think you are going to have to try to, it's not one we applied for, but you would have to try to engage the large registrars and engage in some kind of mass marketing. So I think it really comes down to looking at what the TLD is, who the audience is, and what's the best way to reach them. And I think it varies in different cases. In the case of .London, we have a very enthusiastic partnership with the with London and Partners, and who is the, you know, they're sort of handling the Olympics for London, and we expect to be working closely with them, and we're going to take some guidance from them on how to market to people in London. They know better than us. So it's your partners, it's the name, it's the purpose of the TLD. All of these things matter a lot in how you go about marketing.
I think the concern James raises in this question as well, Michele and Anthony, is that I suppose in a way you could say some generics are more generic than others, in the sense that .rodeo and .london are very either industry or location specific. But I think he picks out three from your list, which are .review, .store and .sale. And that those three, you know, your general widgets widgets company.com will now feel it has to go and register its .sale, .review and .store as well in order to protect its brands in those very generic top level domains.
Well, I mean, I can't really help how people feel.
Yes.
Yeah. My initial response to that. You know, some people feel they have to register everything. I mean, I remember that Walmart has walmart.com, walmartsucks.com, walmartreallysucks.com, walmartreallyreallysucks.com, and walmartreallyreallyreallysucks.com. Now, they felt they had to do that, but did they really? I don't know. So I would say, you know, in the case of brands that are, you know, going to have a lot of work to do, it's by virtue of the fact that they're very big and they are in a lot of areas, right? So I don't think, for instance, that Nike has any need to register in .rodeo, unless they happen to sell rodeo shoes that I'm not aware of. It's really outside the ambit of what they do. They're not going to register in any number of these new top-level domains because that's not where they do business. And this is behavior that you see today. So big brands don't register in Zimbabwe or any number of
other countries. What about big brands trying to do land grabs on generics?
Well, I think that is interestingly something that probably some people thought about, but I didn't. And it's I'm concerned about it from my position of the health of the internet. I think that everyone thought that, you know, whoever got a big generic name would naturally sell it to a lot of people. And what they're saying is, oh, no, we're just going to keep it for ourselves. I think that raises some issues that are going to be of great interest to governments and public policy people. And I think it's rather remarkable that that is their strategy. And it's not just Google and Amazon. It's L'Oreal and with names like Dot Beauty. You know, is that really what was intended? And does it matter what was intended? Can they just go ahead and do it? I think they'll get some pushback on it, but I don't know how far that will go. Personally, I'm not in favor of it, but, you know, my opinion doesn't really matter for much.
Anthony, what do you make of the refusal of it's Facebook and I think Twitter in particular to participate in this at all? Do you think that's telling in any way? Do you think that obviously brands, as you say, such as Amazon and Google have made a play for these new generic top-level domains? There is an alternative strategy that, or I don't know, what do you think? Does it indicate perhaps a lack of strategy or is there anything to be learned or anything to be drawn from the fact that Facebook and Twitter did not participate?
Well, I have to imagine that they're regretting it now. I mean, it's not a lot of money for them. And I think to a certain extent, they believe their own propaganda and they were going to boycott this. And, you know, all their friends agreed and so on. And suddenly Amazon and Google step in and claim all of this space. And they're looking, those two companies in particular sort of validated the concept that these might be valuable. And it's not just Facebook and Twitter. It's Microsoft, too, who applied, but only for their own brands. It's Intel. It's Cisco. It's Oracle. It's all of these big tech companies that were really sort of left out. And, you know, I would hate to be the senior vice president who told somebody, no, we don't want to do this, and suddenly their arch rival is, you know, walked off with the store. It's obviously an unequal contest there. I mean, none of the people like ourselves who are applying for portfolios of names are, you know, have the cash to compete with either of those companies. So whatever they apply for, they get, except when they're in competition with each other.
I guess, Anthony, this is one of the points that's at the core of James Larkin's question that he's posted there as well, is that in one sense, how would you say, this is an explosion in namespace in I suppose internet domains and internet areas and different areas that you need to protect your brand in. In many respects, it's like if you look at it from a point of view of supply and demand, we may end up here with an oversupply of top level domains, some of which are going to be obviously more valuable than others. And let's not deny the fact that how these generic top level domains, I think, are marketed individually, as we already know in relation to the domain industry, some top level domains are marketed much more successfully and much more brightly and cleverly, I think, than others. That, I think, is going to be an issue here, I think, in relation to some of these as well. You've, as I said at the outset, Anthony, you've made a big bet here, and you've bid for, as you say, 92 of them, whether on your own behalf or on behalf of clients. Is there a possibility here that some of those perhaps that you have bid for are going to turn out to be more successful than others? Let's generalize even this beyond your own company. Not all of these 1,930, let's say however many are ultimately approved and go ahead, not all of the ones that are granted are going to be successful, and some of them are not going to be successful at all. Would you say that's fair to say?
Yes, I think it's perfectly obvious. I mean, right now we're in a stage where people are counting up applications as if they were all the same. That's clearly not true. Mm. I think .London is worth, you know, 25 dot plumbings or whatever. That's definitely going to be true. And I would say it goes beyond marketing and it goes to execution as well. And it goes to partnerships that you make and it goes to your distribution channels and how you configure those. And at the end of the day, it comes down to trust. we've seen .ly and the jitters that were caused by the revolution there. And if you're familiar at all with the ccTLD world, you know some of those work better than others. And so when someone is going to put down their money, it's not really the question of it costs, you know, $10 or $20 a year or even $100 a year. It's the fact you're building a business on it, and it needs to work, and it needs to be predictable, and it needs to be responsive, and so on. And that goes also not just with the end consumer, but also a registry's relationship with the registrars. So, yes, I think that matters immensely. And you could take a perfectly good name and ruin it. And, you know, without mentioning names, I think we've seen that. So, yes.
We've definitely seen that.
Michele, do you want to go through some more of the questions, or have you more that you'd like to put yourself?
Well, I mean, I think let's move on to something a little bit more, more topical. I mean, in relation to this, Anthony, how do you feel after spending the last, let's say, 5-6 years in this entire circus around new top level domains? After investing, I don't know how many hours and days you and your team have put into all this, and how much money you've spent. How do you feel now that ICANN has said that this could all come down to how quickly you're able to click on a button?
I think it's a travesty, personally. I think that it's highly discriminatory and unfair, particularly to people who don't have resources. I don't think this is, and Michaela, for your listeners, right, this is about who goes first, and it's about which batch you get into, because ICANN says they can't evaluate all these at once. And so they've come up with this system where you have to click a mouse as close to a target time as possible. And what's happening now is that everyone with resources is deploying these systems to try and get as close as possible, because everyone realizes that launching your domain 12 months after your competition is very bad. And so they want to be first. And it disproportionately hits on people who are, I'll just give you examples, and I don't really know what arrangements they've made, but we know, for instance, that .eos, which is the Basque TLD, has been complaining for a long time that they don't have a lot of money, and they wish ICANN would hurry up. And suddenly there's this new mandate to do, you know, very resource-intensive work to try and beat out some other guy by a couple of milliseconds. And it is the opposite of what was intended and is in ICANN's core principles about letting consumer choice and competition determine the winners. It seems to me like you're having winners determined by, you know, who can write a script and successfully predict network latency best. Which hardly, to me, qualifies as a skill. It qualifies more as, you know, who has the most engineers and the server closest to ICANN's.
A lottery would have been fairer.
It was not allowed. The legal department at ICANN thinks, you know, obviously most lotteries are state monopolies, and ICANN has to operate in a global context, so they were concerned about being sued for running an illegal lottery, as happened with .biz back in 2001. But to my mind, there's very little distinction. This is effectively a lottery, except that it disqualifies some people from buying a ticket.
It's a lottery in the sense that, it's a lottery which people who have more resources have an unfair advantage in.
Yeah, and it's becoming more and more so. Now that people are doing this, everyone's hitting those servers and testing. We've noticed that the response times are becoming less and less predictable. It is becoming more and more chance, not less and less, as people refine their systems. So, you know, I can't imagine the downsides are so big for so many people, and the upsides are, you know, very unpredictable and for very few, that I hope that ICANN doesn't, go forward with this and they come up with a better idea.
We've got some more questions from someone called Tom G on the blog at technology.ie. Michaela, there's terminology here, and there's references to things such as closed registry proposals, which are over my head. What does that mean?
That's what we already talked about. It's about Amazon, Google, and a few of the other big corporates trying to grab things like .cloud and .book. So actually, I understand.
And the fact that they would just exclusively reserve those for their own brands.
Exactly. I mean, I think one of the other question to Anthony is, like, looking towards the ICANN meeting next week in Prague, apart from digital archery and new TLDs, what do you think is going to be the hottest topic?
Well, there's the new CEO, obviously. ICANN has been, charitably call it, challenged recently in terms of how the staff has executed, and I would say also the vision. For instance, we had this big holdup in how the applications were handled, and part of it was simply that was a pretty dumb way to handle applications. You know, if everyone had just sent in a PDF, we wouldn't have had this issue, and they could have had them, scanned or transcribed or whatever, and you would have just taken out this sort of edge of your seat technology that ICANN is specializing in, wondering if it's going to break or not. So I think that a lot of people will be looking forward to seeing who the new CEO is, and many of us will be hoping that this is someone with some expertise in actually managing an organization. So that's certainly one thing that people are going to be looking at going forward. And I think the other thing is, how are the governments going to react to all of this? And the Government Advisory Committee sent a rather cryptic letter to ICANN a couple of days ago where it wasn't clear exactly if they were threatening to delay the whole process or not. So people are going to be, very interested in what the Government Advisory Committee is going to say and how the ICANN board is going to react to it.
And as you pointed out, Anthony, it's going to be interesting just to see other people's faces that you haven't seen, I suppose, since the last ICANN meeting, and the opportunity, as you say, now that it's all open, now that the cards are all on the table. There's a note, I think, Michaela, you put in here in relation to how people played the cards. Some players kept the cards very close to their chest, you were saying, Michaela. Others were very open about what they'd applied for. It's all out in the open now. What do you think of the different strategies?
Well, we announced .eco early on, and immediately there was another one, and we stopped telling anyone anything. We thought that, if we just sort of claimed some space, that other people would say, oh, well, someone's there, we'll go do something else. There's lots of opportunities here. But instead, what happened was that everyone seemed to be copycats, and some of them are obvious, like .app is pretty clearly a good name, but I don't think that people who announced did themselves any favors unless they were able to raise some money. That's my opinion.
No, I think it's an interesting topic. I mean, it's one that I think, There was a lot of kind of cloak and dagger and people saying, hey, we're applying for a load of domains, but we're not saying what. It'll be interesting to see how this all pans out over the next few months and years.
Yeah, it definitely will be. And I think one thing you can one thing to keep in mind is the end result of all this, if people can't make deals, is they end up at an auction where basically the winner is the loser. So I would, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting deals being struck. Probably not immediately, because you still get most of your money back even 4 or 5 months from now. But we're going to be there taking people's temperature. Are these people interested in making deals? Are they feeling so flush that they think they're just going to win it all with money? Are they interested in private auctions? Are they interested in, you withdraw yours on this one, we'll withdraw ours on the other? So I think I would expect to see, you know, shifting coalitions being formed around different names. And I wouldn't be surprised either to see some of these big companies that lost out, that didn't apply, step in the only way they can, which is to try and partner with people who have the applications that they're interested in and saying, hey, we'd like to participate with you in that.
Maybe that was their strategy all along.
if so, it's not a particularly clever one, but...
It's becoming increasingly obvious. This is a game of strategy. This is as you say. You talk about all the different variables, all the different players, all the kind of alliances and combinations and coalitions that are going to emerge. It's going to be intriguing.
Well, I think it puts a lot of pressure on people to execute, right? Because what's happening now with the entry of Google and Amazon is an expectation these things are actually worth money. I mean, look, here's these big players showing up. So, you know, that's going to put pressure on the auction prices of these if it gets to that point. And people are going to have a higher hill to climb to make a profit as they go forward. So, yeah, it there's some high stakes here, even just in the expectation. And we don't even know if that expectation is yet warranted. So it could be very interesting. I think there'll be, you know, cheers and tears.
Anything you want to add, Michele?
No, I mean, I think, you know, Anthony's right. I mean, there's, like, I know from talking to some people that, you know, some people have been saying this to me for months, that, you know, they were expecting certain applicants to run out of money and were hoping to buy them out. I mean, even during the application process, we saw people selling slots in the last few days of the application window. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of horse trading, and it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I mean, you could see I can easily see a scenario where some of these companies who have gone for a whole load of applications. Yeah, I mean, they swap them around with a few others, or maybe they do joint ventures. I mean, we've already seen it with some of the, was it Adrenaline TLD or something, who were going for a whole load of sports-related extensions. I think they dropped a few of them and concentrated on one or two in partnership with somebody else, I think, from what I can remember. Anthony might know.
Yeah, that's correct. But I think what's different now is that it was... I mean, we decided not to do deals with anyone because we had, you know, it's very well to talk about your idea that you had, which is, after all, just a word you can find in the dictionary. And having applied and having seen the competition, now is the point where you can begin to think seriously about that. I mean, Michele, you certainly know that there are all kinds of people walking around saying how they're going to apply for this and that, and then it turned out they never applied for anything.
Yeah, true. Very true.
So now... Now we're going to, you know, we, of course, are looking into, you know, who our competition is, who they are, you know, what kind of resources they have, and I'm sure they're doing the same with us. So it will be interesting, and my hope is that, you know, we don't get one or two players who just think that they can't, you know, they don't need to make deals with anyone, because I think it is harmful to the whole system to have all of this decided, you know, simply on the basis of who has the most cash. I think deals are going to be good for ICANN and the GTLDs, and I hope that people see that, or they find it in their interest to work that way, so that it is, you know, it actually helps the ecosystem.
I think that's about it for this week. Anthony and Michele, I want to thank you both. I want to also refer to a very good post you have in relation to that ICANN meeting on the blog at blog.blacknight.com, Michele. It sounds like one of the more interesting ICANN public meetings in terms of the range of things. This, obviously, in relation to the new TLDs. Also, the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, is that what it is, RAA? That is going to be discussed as well. And as you say, a visit to Prague can't hurt either.
No, it's a lovely, lovely city. I mean, very, very attractive. And, you know, assuming that we all have hotel rooms, it'll be fine.
Exactly. And let me say one more time, you mentioned it before, but the site that you put together, .what.co, is really fantastic. And it's great that you did it because there are some other ones, but they all want excessive amounts of money to even look at it. So it's a great service that you did, and it's a great site. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Anthony. I mean, the thing is, as you know, I mean, we're not applying for TLDs. We're just a dirty, filthy registrar based in Ireland.
Love it. Want more of you.
No, it's okay. I've got enough competition. Thank you.
Well, well done, Michele. And Anthony, thank you for joining us this week.
And I'll see you in a couple of days, Anthony.
Indeed. Take care.
That's it this week from technology.ie. Until next week, Slongafore.